This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehis Muhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I am very confident that we defeated the dictator by far. I call upon all Ugandans to reject the blackmail. General Museveni and his small clique of oppressors are trying yet again to impose themselves on the people of Uganda.
That was Robert Kyagulanyi, better known as Bobi Wine, the main challenger to Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni, claiming he won despite official figures saying the opposite. Details coming up also. Global travel restrictions due to COVID-19 are choking tourism in South Africa. And swarms of desert locusts are returning to the Horn of Africa. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The vote counting continues in Uganda after yesterday's election. Journalist Catherine Nambi is in Kampala. And just a bit ago, she spoke with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson about the situation.
Yeah, the latest developments, right now it is a tallying of votes. They are trickling in slowly. The polls, according to the latest results, Museveni is still in the lead with about 65%. Then he's followed by his major challenger, Bobi Wine, who is at 27% right now. But Bobi Wine, right from morning, is disputing the polls because the polls started coming in last night. But Bobi Wine is refuting the polls. He says there was a lot of rigging. His agents said so at most polling sessions. He didn't have agents to witness the polling. He says some of the agents were arrested a night before. Others were arrested from the polling station. So he says there were a lot of irregularities. Other opposition candidates have not yet come out to comment on the elections. Like Mugisha Muntu said, he will comment at the end of the day, but he's currently at 0.36%. So the Electoral Commission replied to Bobi Wine. They are challenging him to produce the evidence, the proof that his agents were arrested, and why he did not say that in the first place. So that is where it is right now.
Now, you mentioned the Electoral Commission, and they've given the numbers so far. Have they said anything else about how the election went?
Yes, the Electoral Commission says the election was successful in most parts of the country. They say they didn't receive so many reports of irregularities. They say they didn't receive reports of election malpractices or the rigging. Although there are some few polling stations that have been voting today, because there is a polling station where a ballot box was stolen, so they had to repeat the election day. There is a polling station where they were voting for the members of parliament, and there was a mismatch in the names. But they continued voting, so they have disputed that election and they have to repeat it. So they say there were some minor incidences. There were minor incidents in different parts of the country, but they say that the election was generally peaceful. They said there were minimal malpractices.
Now, the other thing, though, is about the overall security situation. I had forgotten to ask you this earlier. How are things looking today?
Today, the security presence has reduced a bit. The men in uniform, I don't know if they are hiding or where, but they are not so much visible like it was yesterday. I think the tension has reduced a bit. There are not so many. Although they are around, you see them once in a while, but not so visible like it was yesterday. The security presence has reduced.
All right. Catherine Nambi is reporting in Kampala. While she was speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson, Bobi Wine tweeted out that the military had taken over his home. A few minutes later, Catherine called back to say that Bobi Wine's spokesman told her the house indeed was surrounded by hundreds of soldiers, with many in the yard of the house. Catherine also reports that Bobi Wine is apparently under house arrest and not allowed to leave. the military acted after Bobby Wine claimed he won.
I am very confident that we defeated the dictator by far. I call upon all Ugandans to reject the blackmail. General Museveni and his small clique of oppressors are trying yet again to impose themselves on the people of Uganda.
Violence against opposition candidates and the refusal by Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni's government to allow most election observers and the media to monitor yesterday's election has many democracy advocates deeply concerned. Victims of an unfair playing field included musician-politician Robert Chagulani, also known as Bobby Wine. For analysis of the situation, as the votes are counted, VOA's Adam Phillips turned to Johnny Carson, who has served as U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs and as U.S. Ambassador to both Uganda and Kenya. He is currently Senior Advisor for the Africa Program at the United States Institute of Peace in Washington, D.C. Carson began by praising Museveni's early days as president, beginning in 1986.
Yes, he deserved early on the enormous credit for being one of the first African leaders to recognize the threat and danger that HIV/AIDS represented. He was also recognized for allowing the Asians who had been expelled by Idi Amin to come back into Uganda. He also stabilized the country, integrating a number of guerrilla forces into his military. He started to embrace free market economic reforms that were being promoted at the time by the World Bank and the IMF. And he started on the path of a new constitution, so there was a recognizable progress that people could see and were optimistic about.
But in 2005 and 2006, he engineered a change in the constitutional mandate setting term limits. And just in 2017, the age limit for presidents as outlined in the Constitution was dispensed with. And there are other very worrying signs.
Yes. Over the last four presidential elections, there has been a steady uptick in the level of conflict, a level of harassment around those contests. In the last two or three elections, the main presidential opposition candidate, Kisi Besigye, has been harassed, intimidated, and violently assaulted. And there appears to be greater level of pre-election harassment and intimidation than there has been in other elections. And certainly in mid-November of last year, some three dozen people were killed in violence that erupted following Bobby Wine's arrest. And very regrettably, we've also seen a great deal of harassment against a number of the presidential candidates.
And there's been a huge government crackdown on the media, especially social media.
I am aware of the fact that the government has shut down social media. I think that probably the government is concerned about the ability of social media to be used to mobilize support for opposition candidates. I do note that before the government shut down social media, the social media companies had already started to take down a number of sites for sending out misinformation and false information.
Do you think that all these factors will fatally compromise the outcome of the election?
I'm not going to prejudge the outcome of the contest. I will say that it is important that there be election observation, and the most important election observers are domestic observers who represent non-governmental organizations, civil society, religious groups. And it is important that the media be able to see that the elections are both transparent and inclusive and are run with fairness and integrity. It's also extremely important that international organizations like the East African Community, the African Union, the Commonwealth, the European Union, the Carter Center be allowed to observe and monitor elections.
Any final words for us?
I hope that the country does come out of this. Uganda is a wonderful country with really great people, and I hope that we all get a chance to see what the people actually voted on and participated in.
That was Johnny Carson, who once served as U.S. Ambassador to Uganda and currently Senior Advisor for the African Program at the United States Institute of Peace, speaking with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. The UN Refugee Agency is calling for an immediate stop to election-related violence in the Central African Republic that has sent tens of thousands of refugees fleeing for their lives to neighboring countries. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Presidential and parliamentary elections in the Central African Republic on December 27th were meant to advance the peace process and unify the country's warring factions. They have instead had the opposite effect. UN Refugee Agency spokesman Boris Cheshirkov says the situation has evolved for the worse as fighting among various armed groups has escalated, increasing instability in the country.
We've seen that the number of refugees displaced and moving across borders into neighboring countries has doubled in just 1 week. We were reporting of 30,000 refugees last Friday. Today it's already 60,000, and much of that is the increase we've seen in the DRC.
Cheshikov says most of the refugees, more than 50,000, have fled to the Democratic Republic of Congo across the Ubangi River. He says some 58,000 people remain displaced inside the CAR, and nearly 9,000 refugees have sought asylum in neighboring Cameroon, Chad, and the Republic of Congo. He says the largest exodus occurred in a single day on January 13th when 10,000 refugees arrived in the DRC. That, he says, coincided with reports of intensified violence in the CAR, forcing people from their homes.
What we are hearing from those that are coming in is that some of them have been separated from loved ones, some of them have had loved ones killed, that the attacks have intensified, that they have seen some advancements by armed groups, that a number of people have reported sexual violence.
The UNHCR also has received disturbing reports of voters being harassed and physically attacked and of pillaging taking place. Cheshirkov says essential needs are mounting as more refugees flee the chaos in the CAR. He says the UNHCR and partners are scaling up aid for the new arrivals, but there are limits to what they can do. He says only 30% of the $151 million appeal launched in November has been received. He adds aid agencies soon will run out of cash to help the many in need without urgent international support. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, warns that swarms of desert locusts are returning to the Horn of Africa just 1 year since the worst invasion in 70 years. A senior FAO official told VOA that immature swarms formed in eastern Ethiopia and central Somalia in December have migrated to southern Ethiopia and northern Kenya. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
Around this time last year, swarms of desert locusts began spreading across the Horn of Africa, devastating crops and livelihoods. Now, officials say another infestation is endangering the region's food security situation again. Cyril Ferrand is FAO's resilience team leader in East Africa.
The region is therefore facing a new breeding generation, and the most affected countries are Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia at the moment. The situation is of course very serious and very critical, and it will remain so until the end of the upsurge. However, comparing to the situation a year ago, swarms are much smaller and are identified rapidly thanks to better surveillance capacities in the region.
A UN impact assessment carried out recently in Ethiopia, Kenya and Somalia found that half of pastoralist communities and about a third of farming households suffered losses after the desert locusts destroyed crops and pastures. Ferrand is appealing for more support and urgent action to avoid a looming humanitarian crisis. He said a recent contribution of $1.5 million from the UN's Emergency Response Fund will support ongoing operations in Kenya to control the outbreak.
An aircraft will therefore keep operating in Kenya for an additional 2 months or so. But we need more resources for other countries as well, especially Ethiopia, Somalia, Sudan, and also Yemen. In fact, FAO faces a funding shortfall of around $34 million in 2021 to maintain the operation. It would be really catastrophic for farmers and herders if we have to stop the surveillance and control operation due to lack of resources.
The UN agency says more swarms are expected to spread further from southern Ethiopia to northern and eastern counties of Kenya. Kenyan authorities say they have put measures in place to deal with the situation. Appearing recently on a local television show, government spokesman Cyrus Oguna gave more details.
There's a lot that is being done to ensure that the locusts do not necessarily invade other counties away from where they currently are. You know, during the first wave, certainly there was cash transfers that were given to those that affected, and therefore this second wave will be treated in the manner that the first wave was treated. Assessment indeed is being made to determine who are the affected persons and the extent to which they can be assisted.
Keith Chrisman, FAO's senior locust forecasting officer, says governments in the region are better prepared to address the problem this time.
Well, last year at this time, we were in a very, very precarious situation. Huge numbers of locust swarms had developed and they were moving and invading, countries that had not seen locusts for 70 years. Here we are in January 2021. It means we have everything in place. Yes, we do have shortages of funding to keep those operations going, and this is extremely critical. But at least we're not at the stage of having to look for aircraft, having to order equipment from abroad. And
UN officials urge governments of affected countries to continue surveillance and control operations to tackle the threat. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Global travel restrictions due to COVID-19 are choking tourism in South Africa, and small businesses are the hardest hit. South Africa's borders have long been open to international tourists, but arrival numbers are nowhere near pre-virus figures. Tuso Kumalo visited a number of tourist hotspots around Johannesburg and filed this report.
Maboneng Precinct, a tiny place in the fading downtown Johannesburg suburb of Jeppestown, has over the years grown into a city within a city thanks to tourists who developed a passion for the place. Its old-style buildings have been converted to restaurants, museums, art galleries, bars, clothing boutiques, curio shops and other tourist attractions that normally would be packed with tourists from around the world. But COVID-19 has left Maboneng looking like a shell of itself. Lorraine Sweswe, director of Cebelihle Art and Accessories, a shop that sells African artifacts and designs ranging from clothing to house decors, blames coronavirus travel restrictions for the absent tourists.
The business is very low. I can say 25% because of the COVID, we have been affected mostly. When we opened, the European countries closed, so no tourism is coming. It's just a few from African countries that are coming.
Holly Perkins, an American national living in Tanzania, was among few tourists who recently visited South Africa. She says travel restrictions are the hardest hurdle for many tourists.
For me, the hardest part has been the flights. We've had multiple airlines cancel on us, and we even had to get COVID tests when we landed here. But the way that everybody in South Africa has been really compliant with masks and with distancing, it feels really safe.
On the western side of Johannesburg lies another tourist hotspot along Vilakazi Street in Soweto. Tourists used to flock there to see the house of anti-apartheid icon Nelson Mandela that was turned into a museum. A variety of tourist attractions sprouted along the street, making it the heart of Soweto. Now is the sorry side thanks to COVID-19. Street hawkers have deserted their stalls and some restaurants have shut their doors. South Africa's ban on alcohol has also silenced Soweto beats from multiple bars that always kept tourists lingering around more than they had budgeted for. For many years, Shaka Zulu has been converting cow leather into all kinds of things along Vilakazi Street. He says the absence of foreign tourists has left him down and out.
2 weeks, 3 weeks without a sale, nothing, not even one. It's not easy, it's hard.
Chifua Chivengwa is the CEO of the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. He says the entire sector is in trouble.
We'll have to start figuring out what we need to do in terms of the staff that we have. And it may be that there will be more job losses. And I'm afraid that at the moment things are not going to be looking as good.
Although Chivengwa is positive the industry will bounce back, flight cancellations due to the new COVID-19 variant means it could be long before international flights resume carrying more tourists. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
46 pygmies have been killed in a militia attack in a village in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo's Ituri province. Quoting senior provincial officials yesterday, Reuters report says the attack was carried out by the notorious Allied Democratic Forces, ADF, militias. Local security forces have been dispatched to the village to investigate, and troops are recovering bodies. The ADF, a Ugandan armed group, is believed to have carried out a string of massacres in eastern Congo, killing more than 1,000 civilians since the start of 2019, according to United Nations figures. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiji Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the